There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, calling an audible here. We'll go to some audio. This has come out as Acting Director of the Secret Service, Ronald Rowe, has said the local agencies were not responsible in the failure in Pennsylvania and the assassination attempt of Donald Trump. He is laying out a timeline right now. Let's go to that audio.
Texted the Secret Service counter-sniper team leader about a suspicious person and sent two photos of the individual later identified as the assailant. At 5:53 p.m., the Secret Service counter-sniper team leader texted the Secret Service counter-sniper teams that local law enforcement was looking for a suspicious individual outside of the perimeter lurking around the AGR building. At this time, Secret Service personnel were operating with the knowledge that local law enforcement was working on an issue of a suspicious individual. The concept of local law enforcement working on such issues is common at sites. And on July 13th, there were over 100 calls for support. At 6 p.m., former President Trump took the stage to begin remarks. And based on what I know right now, neither the Secret Service counter-sniper teams nor members of the former president's security detail had any knowledge that there was a man on the roof of the AGR building with a firearm. It is my understanding that personnel were not aware the assailant had a firearm until they heard gunshots. At 6:11 p.m., a member of the former President Trump's protective detail contacted their Pittsburgh field office counterpart to inquire about the radio update that there was an issue local law enforcement was looking into near the perimeter. At 6:11 p.m., the assailant's first volley of three shots was fired, and within 3 seconds, the former president's detail rushed the stage and covered former President Trump, shielding him with their own bodies. The 4-8 shots took place over the next several seconds. 15.5 seconds after the assailant's first shot, a Secret Service counter-sniper fired a single round that neutralized the assailant. That concludes a quick, brief summary of the timeline. And with that, I'll turn it over to our staff here to begin any questions.
All right. So you heard a little bit of that timeline, not the full thing that was put out by, because we didn't get into it. I mean, they put out the full thing, but we didn't get to it before then. But taking responsibility, you know, that whole idea that might have been on Butler Police, but it sounds like they're taking full responsibility. Can we go back? Okay, we'll go back to the audio here.
Has anyone been suspended with or without pay? Has anyone been fired? And will you tell us as people are disciplined along the way, or is this something we're going to need to just constantly be asking? Or will you update and tell us 5 people have been fired, 6 people, 7 people? What can you tell us?
Sure. Thank you for that question, David. So as I said in my opening statement, there are going to be there's the mission assurance review. If that mission assurance review is looking into if there were policy violations. At that point now, if in fact there were policy violations, at that point now it'll go into a parallel path of a disciplinary type of investigation. Those are internal investigations that deal with employee matters, so we're not going to be able to provide real-time updates or continuously to provide you updates on that. But what I will tell you is that these are very thorough investigations, and if in fact there were policy violations and they are substantiated, those employees will be held accountable.
I think, if I just may, sir, people want accountability.
You may not be able to tell us names or positions or something, but will you be able to say that people have been disciplined? People want to hear that there's some accountability here.
I will be able to, at least at a high level, begin provide at least some type of statement that people are being accountable, being held accountable.
If I may, and I appreciate this, Fox Digital obtained some new video of somebody on the roof, which we believe is the assailant, that was running back and forth while President Trump was speaking. What do you make when you see of that?
It affirms to me, and again, and you heard this from the FBI, and they're still conducting interviews and looking at this. It even just affirms to me that this was a failure. We should have had better protection for the protectee. We should have had better coverage on that roof line. We should have had at least some other set of eyes from the Secret Service point of view covering that. That building was very close to that outer perimeter. And we should have had more of a presence. And so as far as the timeline running back and forth, I know the FBI has provided a bit of a chronology as well. And so I'd have to go back and look at that. But the bottom line is this, David. This was a Secret Service failure. That roof line should have been covered. We should have had better eyes on that.
Thanks, Director. We're going to go to the Washington Post. Perry Stein, next question.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I have just a quick follow-up. Can you describe, you said there were 100 calls for support, who those calls came from and what those looked like? And also, moving forward, do you anticipate, and if so, what any different changes in protocol between how Secret Service communicates or works with local law enforcement specifically as they work to secure events or other things?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So with regards to calls for support, it was a very hot day that day. There was a lot of not only EMS type of calls to address people, but, there were people that needed some other type of law enforcement assistance. This happens, candidly, happens a lot at outdoor rallies, where especially on hot days. So there was a lot of traffic, radio traffic on the local net about, hey, I need EMT here. So there was a lot of people that were needing assistance. With respect to the interoperability, so one of the things that I've directed is I've commissioned a task force. And that task force is going to be leveraging the resources of the Department of Homeland Security. It'll be co-chaired in all likelihood by someone from the Secret Service and someone from CISA. And I think we're also going to bring in some state and local law enforcement. The interoperability challenge, it's not an easy fix. It's not as simple as just trying to figure out the local frequency of the agency you're working with and then piping that into your radio network. It requires a substantial technical fix. In the meantime, before we can get to that, what I need to have is I need to make sure that our folks, when they're out there, we use a counterpart system. On the day in Butler, we had a Pennsylvania State Trooper in our security room. They also had a unified command post that had some of the other agencies that were on site that day. It is plainly obvious to me that we didn't have access to certain information, not by anybody's fault. It just so happened that there was a sense of urgency, that there might have been radio traffic that we missed. We have to do a better job of that. So moving forward, in addition to this task force that we'll provide more information on next week as we begin to stand that up, I've also directed all of our SACs, our special agents in charge of field offices across the country, to reevaluate where we put our security rooms. If a state or local sets up a unified command post, maybe we need to be in that room as well, as opposed to just being in another room and relying on that counterpart system. It was so apparent to me that in this incident, in the final 30 seconds, which has been the focus of what happened before the assailant opened fire, there was clearly radio transmissions that may have happened on that local radio net that we did not have. And so we have to do a better job of co-locating, leveraging that counterpart system, and this is going to drive our operations going forward. We did not. It did not make it over to us. So whether we did not hear it, it just did not make it over to us. It did not make it to us. And I go back to my opening statement, where the members of the detail, they did not all they knew that they're the issue, that the locals were working an issue at the president's 3 o'clock, which would have been off to his right, which is where the shot came from.
To clarify on the 100 calls that you got roughly that day, I understand a lot of them were heat related. How many specifically were suspicious people? Was this the only call, the eventual shooter, that was a suspicious character? And then also just to, can you clarify, did you guys have a drone on site? Did you try to use it? And if not, like, why did you not use the locals' offer of a drone?
Sure. So as I understand it now, based on the information I have, there were other calls of suspicious individuals. And your other question was about drones?
About the drones.
Drones.
What was the reason you couldn't use it, and then also there was this offer from the locals, somebody had a drone.
Right. So we did not have a drone on site. We did not put a drone up. Based on the information I have right now, I am aware that there was a request from a local agency to offer to fly a drone on that day, and that is also part of the mission assurance review that I've asked to get some better insight in. One of the other changes that I implemented when I became the acting director is we are now going to leverage the use of unmanned aerial systems at sites now. So we are putting those assets out, and you know, we should have had better line of sight on some of those high ground concerns. We thought we might have had it covered with the human eye, but clearly we are going to change our approach now, and we are going to leverage technology and put those unmanned aerial systems up.
We're going to go to Nicole Skanga with CBS News.
Thank you so much for doing this. You mentioned from Butler ESU to U.S. Secret Service counter snipers. I'm curious if that is routine. You know, there were two communication channels at the Butler rally, and you referenced earlier this week it appears that information was stuck or siloed at the state and local channel. What was the plan to relay information from locals to the Secret Service initially? What is the protocol? And I just have one follow-up.
Sure. So, Nicole, we use that counterpart system, right? And so the teams, especially on the tactical side, when it comes to the tactical, our counter-assault team, they actually had an embed with them from the local TAC team, and they had that radio net as well with Pennsylvania State Police. With respect to the counter snipers, they were using cellular or telephone text communications. At this point, moving forward, what I have directed now is that everybody should be using the radio net. And if we don't have the ability to pipe in or leverage that counterpart system, that's one of the things that we're looking at now. We should be able to have direct comms with the people that are supporting us. And that's moving forward. That's what I have directed.
So just to clarify, U.S. Secret Service counter snipers did not have radio communications.
Not with the local CS folks that were providing a support. They were basically had an area of responsibility independent from where our counter snipers were securing.
And just a last thing, did the U.S. Secret Service counter sniper teams that arrived on site on July 10th ever relay line of sight concerns? What came of that? And can you confirm that this was the first 2024 campaign event that counter sniper teams were assigned to the former president?
Sure. As part of their advance, they identified those line of sight, those high ground concerns, and there's a division of labor. With respect to the whether or not this was the first time, it was. It was the first time Secret Service counter snipers were deployed to support the former president's detail.
Hi, thank you so much for doing this. I have a question about the review that you did, the picture that you showed in the Senate the other day of the vantage point that the local snipers had. How do you know that that's the window that they were actually posted at? Because they're saying that they're on a completely other side of the building. And related to that, has the Secret Service actually interviewed the snipers that were in the AGR building? Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. So once the FBI had released the Butler Farm Show site, we were able to take custody of it, and we send the full resources of our Office of Investigations, which included the Forensic Services Division. We did a full site reconstruction, and this is part of our ongoing mission assurance review. As part of that, that also included the plotting and also trying to identify where not only our personnel were, but also where state and local law enforcement were. And then the second part of your question was?
I mean, how did you identify where they were?
Mm-hmm.
And have you interviewed the local
sniper? So the mission assurance, we will start. We're starting with our federal personnel and working out. We will get, if they're willing to be interviewed, we will ask for the local law enforcement on site to be interviewed that day. How we went back and reconstructed that was based on what we had based on the ops plan, and then also based on what our own folks, as they understood it on the day of.
Well, but I mean,
you talked a lot about how you may not have been as specific as you need to be. So how do you know that they were in that window, that if they looked left, they could have seen them? Because yeah. They're saying there's no way. They couldn't see any of the routes from where they were pinned to the other side. So I think what we'll do is we'll let the mission assurance play that out, and we'll look forward to interviewing them and definitely getting their side of the story. But what I also want to reiterate is this was a Secret Service failure. And so they should not be blamed. We're not trying to shift blame to anybody. That's the important takeaway, that we need our state and local partners out there doing this with us every day.
Thanks, Director. We're going to go to Peter Thomas at ABC.
Director, thank you for taking the time. Just a couple questions, if you could walk us through some things to help us better understand. Have you gotten to the bottom of why there was no one stationed on the roof from a law enforcement perspective? And why there was no one there to secure the building to make sure no one could get up there. Have you gotten any clarity on why those two lapses in security were in place? And I have a couple quick follow-ups.
Sure. It's something that, again, having been there the day after I was named the acting director, I wanted to put eyes on and go up there and see it.
Yes, sir.
And looking at that site, you know, seeing how close that site was to the stage, seeing where it was, it definitely raised a lot of questions in my mind that there should have been physical presence, if not on the roof, that there should have been better security to prevent anyone from getting up on that roof. Moving forward, I've directed our Office of Protective Operations and our Special Operations Division now that when we are up operational and we have counter snipers out there, that we were working with locals, and that they in fact will also be out present. At the very least, the presence of a law enforcement officer can deter a lot of bad activity. Having been a local police officer, I will never know how many crimes I prevented just by being there, just by walking the street and being out there. So moving forward, one of the things that we want to do is we want to deter people from even thinking about trying to do something like this again. And the only way we can do that is leveraging not only the resources that we have, but the resources of our state and locals, and putting them out there in an overt presence.
Two very quick follow-ups.
Okay, a little bit of that pressure going on right now with the acting director of the Secret Service, number one, saying that it was not the fault of local police and going through. It was, you heard the reporters, too, trying to get him to say, are you going to fire people, you know, in regular people language? And he said, well, there'll be these things done, and maybe at a high level, they'll let us know. All right, coming right back.
On FM Talk 106.5.
I got you. Picked up a few pieces of information, actually more than a few, from the presser going on with Ronald Rowe, who's the acting director of the Secret Service right now. He admitted they should have had somebody watching the roof. Ding! Okay, that one. They should have had all been on the same radio channel. I don't know how he said it, but they didn't have a connection to all the radio channels. You know, just, what do we do? Go to 16. I mean, just all go to the same. You know, obviously, I'm just joking about the 16. You go to some kind of, encrypted channel, but you all go to the same channel. They said certain info was not available. See, so it was interesting. I mean, they said the responsibility lies on the Secret Service, and we're not blaming local police, by the way, we didn't have certain information. We didn't have the radio frequencies. We didn't have the person on the roof. I don't know. And the other interesting part, too, he's been asked about, hey, basically, like I said before the news there, y'all gonna fire anybody? He danced around that. He said there would be actions and people be held accountable. And then they said, well, you know, will we know about it? He's like, well, maybe at a high level or something like that. So not sure. Yeah, maybe with government service like that, you can't say whether you fired somebody or not. But he's taking the licks for it here and saying that, you know, it was a failing on the Secret Service's part. I mean, things that both of y'all had come up with on your own already, but there's, you know, there's the acting director of the Secret Service admitting it now. All right, let's see. A lot of text to get to. I tell you, we'll come to this after the break. I will give this one from C.B. Carl. Sounds like the Secret Service was practicing a bunch of assuming, right? You know what assuming does. It makes a... Yeah. There's a lot of assumption there. I mean, is it... Just they've been doing it so long. I mean, I wonder who was not... Like, who... Did they not tell somebody to be on the roof, or did somebody not go on the roof? Did they tell somebody not to go look at something, or did they just shirk the responsibility? I think that's what we're all trying to get to the bottom of.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Friday. It's a good thing. Time to check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars, and let's check on some inventory going on into the weekend, and also if somebody is looking for something in particular. I think David may be traveling. Hey, man.
Hey, bud. Well, I am traveling. I'm not looking for cars today. We're up here moving my son into college, but I do have a plane ticket for next week, so I'm hoping this hurricane gets out of here where we can get down there and get some cars and bring them back. We've sold a lot, and we need to replace them.
Yeah, and you get the cream of the crop of those vehicles from around here, but y'all have such a big inventory, and you go to other places to get the best vehicles as well, and maybe that's a chance for somebody to say, hey, David, you know what I'm looking for? A such and such, right?
That's exactly right. Anything you're looking for, just give us a call. Let us know. Go on the website and put it in there. I mean, the cars that we're buying in Florida, they've already been inspected. Most all of them have already been reconditioned. If any needed tires or oil changes or any of that stuff, I mean, they're ready to go when we get them back. So it makes it a whole lot easier. And we're the least we bought at any trips, 20. So if we go down there, we'll come back with couple three loads. It'll be a great selection.
Yeah, so even if people have been through the lot before you go and they're like, well, they didn't have the vehicle, better to check back online or in person when these trucks come in.
We get stuff in almost daily, if not every other day. So if you go by the lot and you think you've seen everything we've got, you are mistaken. You need to come back by or at least call us.
Good stuff. Well, tell them the phone number and the physical location for LCM.
You can call us at 251-375-0068. You can come see us. We're on Highway 90 at Plantation and Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Or you can go on the website, lcmmotorcars.com. Check us out.
Thanks, David.
Have a good weekend,
buddy. All right, you too. There he goes, David McCrary from LCM Motor Cars. Let's go to the text line here. And appreciate y'all's patience here. When I saw that the acting director of the Secret Service, Ronald Rowe, was speaking, I thought that was... something, and they're still asking questions of them. It seems like a lot of the same questions now. We'll go through your comments and questions here on the text line. Let's see. Ricky had sent me something about Robert Kennedy Jr., which, by the way, he is now officially on the ballot. Where's the story? You can tell I'm clicking here. I got a story. I remember it. I don't know if I find it or not, but RFK is on the ballot in Alabama. So that's been. Because there's a question of them. Now, they can keep him off the debate stage, but can they keep him off the ballot? Looks like that is a no here at home. Also, speaking of people on the ballot, and thank you. Leanna has this story up from the Daily Caller on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. And it's no big surprise, but I guess it's official. I can't believe it happened. This headline, Dems hand Kamala Harris presidential nomination. It is now official, I guess. Vice President Kamala Harris has secured enough delegates, who would have believed it, to receive the Democrat Party's nomination to be president. That, according to The DNC committee chair, Jamie Harrison, announcing today, said, "I'm so proud to confirm that Vice President Harris has earned more than the majority of votes from all convention delegates and will be the nominee of the Democrat Party following the close of voting on Monday." End quote. Anybody surprised? No, nobody's surprised. Nobody surprised that happened. But just thought it's now official in the mix. So I know y'all thought maybe something would change. There would be people having their voices heard, but no, it's a done deal. All right, and to the text line now. Back to text line. Damn Yankee says about the he said, "Got a new AC system for our house 3 years ago. Spent an extra $5,000 to upgrade to the highest SEER rated unit. My bill is also $100 more a month. So what the blank?" Yeah. But he said, doesn't matter what you do, they got you. Let's see here. The it doesn't have Meta. Said, "I ain't much on drill rap, but I'm a sucker for some skill saw rap. DJ DeWalt and MC Makita. Man, I run both their jams." Which, by the way, how about this doesn't have Meta? I built some flounder lights last week that are powered by my 20-volt DeWalt batteries. So I can switch them out. I can be running a sawzall or, you know, screw gun or something like that, and then boom, flounder light. How about that, huh? Lisa in Robertsdale said, "We have Baldwin EMC, and our power bill is ridiculous this year." Because I know Sean earlier was looking at trying to ask about comparing the two rates. I'd like to do that. I'm trying to get maybe next week I can research, and we'll do it in the following week, kind of go through the different utility electric providers and see what the rates are, see if they're lined up or not. Monty said, "While we're at it, let's discuss the profit margin and CEO salary of State Farm Insurance. All the while not paying replacement cost of vehicles, they now use actual cash value, which is open to interpretation and arbitrary at best. More flipping crooks. Your show is putting me in a bad mood today." Well, I'm sorry about that, Monty, but I think you can handle it. It put me in a bad mood, too. I mean, talking about power rates, trust me. Ozzy says, "We have a farm. We have a farm in Reform, Alabama, and if anybody corrects me, that's the way it's said. But I've spent time the radio station that I started in commercial radio. You'll hear us do like our top of the hour ID, where it says, you know, WAVHFM Daphne Mobile. So Daphne, the original city of license for WAVH, but we studios in Mobile." So our old station used to have original city of license in Reform, Alabama, and it would be Reform, Tuscaloosa. And so we always laughed at, like, Reform, Tuscaloosa. Said, "We have a farm in Reform, Alabama, with an 800-square-foot house and an outdoor light. Our average Alabama power bill is $1,200 per month." Jesus, Mary and Joseph, Ozzy. What? There's somebody. You got kinfolk up there that are plugging into an outside socket? That's berserk. 800-square-foot house at $1,200 per month. Because, you know, if you got the outdoor light, like you got a, you know, one of those dawn-to-dusk lights, it's not burning that much. Dude, that is crazy. He said, "We don't run any electricity to speak of. When we come to Gulf Shores, we leave the outdoor lights on at the Reform, and our power bill for the month for that light runs $300 per month. Our power bill with EMC here in Gulf Shores runs an average of $120 a month. Huge difference." I'm stuck. Ozzy, I got no words for you. 800 square feet and the outdoor light. And those outdoor lights, they don't burn a whole bunch. $1,200 a month. My gosh. Paul says the storm looks like it may pucker out. Let's hope it puckers out, Paul. Dr. Bill said this morning, I mean, there's no center to guide, you know, to look to track it. But his feeling was, with the situation as it stands, whatever it becomes, and if it becomes a named storm, it'd be Debbie, would be, as it stands now, coming to the east of us, which is way better than the west of us. Jimmy, this is real. Jimmy and Bay Manette said, "Sean, thank God for auto pay. You don't ever see doesn't hurt nearly as bad." Yeah, there's some truth to that, right? But then you stop and look at your bill and you go, oh my gosh. Let's see here. Otto says, "Sean, if she's the best the Dems have," I guess meaning Vice President Harris, "I have to say that they are really Dems." Well, they've decided. A big shocking. I like how they put this out. The DNC chair, Jamie Harrison, going, "I'm proud to announce and confirm Vice President Harris has earned more than..." Of course she did. I mean, what? Hey. Did we think she wasn't going to get the nod there? Hey. Yeah, and RFK on the ballot here. Yeah, he's got enough signatures to be on the Alabama ballot in November. There's other states he's still... Well, I'll tell you what, we'll review that when we get back. The RFK effect, which could be, the way it looks like now, not a good thing for Trump.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 148, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Friday style. Yeah, saw this as well. Well, we talked about the not shocking story here that Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, has earned the majority of votes of the conventional delegates, will be the nominee of the Democrat Party. Not surprised there. I guess the little more intrigue in the Democrat side of it is who will be the running mate. I know that story up right now. And Daily Beast says Josh Shapiro and Mark Kelly vetted Kamala Harris Veep stakes. And maybe it is a feign, right? So maybe it's like... Maybe they're psyching you out. They're putting the two-step on you here. But the announcement is going to be in Pennsylvania. I think Philadelphia on Tuesday, right? So I mean, maybe I'm taking the bait there that it's going to be Josh Shapiro because the announcement's in Pennsylvania, and then they're going to surprise us. It's Mark Kelly of Arizona. I don't know. But it just seems they're going to do this. Now, Harris needs to be in Pennsylvania just like Trump needs to be in Pennsylvania, right? The big battleground state. There, it's interesting too. The days of Texas and Florida. Remember when we'd have to watch Texas and Florida at late in the night, watching Texas and Florida. Now it's other states. Colorado has been in the mix in the past, but Pennsylvania, big time. And then to the west there, you know, you look at Ohio and Michigan, those states as well. But so you could say, yeah, well, she's going to be in Philly to rally folks, rally Democrat votes in Philly. But she at the same time is going to announce her VP pick. Doesn't that make you think it's Josh Shapiro? If it's Mark Kelly out of Arizona, right? Gabby Gifford's husband. Wouldn't that be kind of rude to Shapiro to do it in his? I don't know. And maybe I'm taking the easy bait. That's why I have I have trepidation because it seems too simple, right? Seems too simple that she would be in Pennsylvania, tell everybody she's going to be in Pennsylvania Tuesday to make the announcement. Why wouldn't it be Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, who, by the way, if you hadn't heard this guy talk, he has he does like a Barack Obama, like a President Obama imitation. Like, that's how he talks. He's like, it's an affected, the pacing of it. Just go listen and see what time I go. Josh Shapiro, Pennsylvania Governor, go watch something, listen to him talking. And I'm like, he is doing, you know, just the staccato, kind of the way Obama talks. He was just doing that. There you go. There's the palace intrigue Tuesday. Oh my gosh. But the Shapiro thing would be interesting too, because he has been not on board with the far left progressive anti-Israel angle. And Shapiro's Jewish. I don't know if he's practicing or I'm not sure about that, but he's had some pretty strong words about Israel's right to defend themselves and the October 7th attacks and all that. So how do you, even though I have said a gajillion times that people don't vote for the VP, they vote for the president, but will that be an issue? Is it the same thing as, it may be different though. All the attacks going on J.D. Vance because they've kind of exhausted all their material on Trump, so they go after J.D. Vance. Will this happen? You know, go, whoa, what do you say? You've got a VP that disagrees with you about Israel. I don't know. I'll have to watch that. All right, to the, and T-Bone said on the text line that Ozzy had won the weekend weather scale this morning. That's right. So, and because of that, Ozzy, with your winnings from the weekend weather scale this morning on Mobile Mornings, I think you have enough money to pay even more per month to Alabama Power after you get your autographed Mobile Weather and Marine Almanac from Dr. Bill Williams. Use that to pay Alabama Power. So Pat said, Ozzy, you should have someone look into that. So we're all on the same page. We're all worried about you, Ozzy, because of what you're paying on that 800 square feet. Pat says, Ozzy, you should have someone look into that. We have a 1,400 square foot house with an outside pole light on the sticks, and it's only $380 a month. Yeah, see, it's something. Do you have Ken up there? Ozzy, do you have Ken? Because it's, are they coming over while y'all are gone, plugging into an outside plug and like
running their camper or something like that. Now, Chris in Orange Beach, he said, I live in a 400-square-foot concrete block building. I have a 10,000-watt BTU air conditioner. I live in 200 feet of the building and keep the thermostat on 60. The icebox, baby. My power bill is $70 a month on average. He said, Riviera Power rocks. How about intrepid reporters? How about I get these young guys over at Lanyap, you know? Y'all, if you're listening over there in the newsroom, can we, because I know y'all did a story, what, two issues ago, and Rob had talked about it, the Alabama power price increases, you know, that across the board and what it was affecting, like, universities and all that. What if we just do the, what if we just pick up, take every utility in our area? And then also I'd be interested, like, what they're paying across state lines, and do like a little compare and contrast. You know, do my work for me, will you? Please, thank you. Hey, by the way, so for Pat and the rest of us, Ozzie just got back with me on the text line and said, this has been going on for over 10 years, and we've had the electric company come out a couple times to check. Alabama Power is ridiculous. That is ridiculous, man. That's heavy duty. 12, I mean, that's, I don't know what's going on. And by the way, I mentioned Robert Kennedy Jr. On the ballot in November for Alabama. Yeah, I guess in this last week, he got on the ballot in Montana, Massachusetts, Vermont, North Dakota, Kansas, Virginia, and Arkansas, and Alabama as well. And campaign director, Kennedy campaign director said, the campaign surpassed 1 million signatures, completes petitioning in 8 more states. Get ready. We will soon be on the ballot in all 50 states. There's, for a while there, I think both presumptive candidates were worried about the RFK effect. I know you hear one story and said RFK Jr. is going to take a lot of votes from Biden. And then another story is going to take a lot from Trump. And then you saw, without them telling you directly, the reach out and places Trump was going, and libertarian event and things he had said about Robert Kennedy, told me that their internal polling told him it was not good. And now with Kamala Harris in as the nominee, I think right now, just sitting here looking at it, that RFK Jr. does more damage to Trump pulling votes away than he does to Kamala Harris. Be interesting to see. I mean, if you have the, I mean, you look at the polls, and there's so many polls out, but it could be, you know, plus minus three, you know, anywhere from plus minus one, plus minus three, plus minus four. If RFK comes in with even sub Perot numbers and he's pulling those numbers away from Trump, that could be a big thing. And with him on the ballot, if he gets on the ballot in all 50 states, especially those battleground states, what does that mean? You know, I think it would be, I heard stories of, and I don't know if this was just rumor mill or was confirmed, that there was some outreach from the Trump campaign to RFK Jr. I know they had some right after the attempted assassination of Trump. They got together and talked, and RFK was commiserating in so many words, and they were putting like a joint document out or something to that effect. And I think this is the rumor mill part, that they were maybe offering something in the Trump administration to RFK Jr. But, you know, I mean, people say, and they're like, I love him, his vaccine stance, I'm with you. But that's just one plank. There's a lot of planks there. I mean, a lot of planks are really pretty heavy left liberal things, so people need to think about that. But if they would give him an appointment in the Trump cabinet, would he then fold his campaign, give his endorsement to Trump? I don't think that's happening. But I think that's going to be the conversation in the next couple of weeks, will be like, what's the RFK effect on Trump? That's going to be significant. Also, before we wrap up, too, I want to give a accolade here. Mentioned Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch when I was talking to Scott Johnson about his story. And he won't be on with us next week because I'm not going to be here. I have a fill-in host, but he'll be on with us the following week to do his Ask the Sheriff portion. But it was a WPMI NBC 15 story from Darwin Singleton about Mobile County Sheriff critical of proposed law to define and curb assault weapons. Remember, we talked about that legislation has been pre-filed, that House Bill 23. It was, I forget the Democrat that filed this. Oh, yeah, Kenyatta Hassel said he filed the bill, and it is a bill. Here it is. It's a bill that would would make you have to, you'd have to have a license to have what he calls an assault rifle or assault weapon. And in the story, so they're talking about all that. So then they're quoting Sheriff Birch. And I think this is good. It said, Birch produced a picture that shows how one weapon, a Ruger Mini 14, which is a fun rifle, can be altered to look very different, but argues it's the same gun operating in the same manner. Quote, all that is the exact same rifle dressed out with a different stock, different accessories you can purchase, functions the same way, fires the same round. So again, it's all about aesthetics. Because this bill, this is like when they went after the Clinton assault weapons ban, where it's all about flash suppressors, folding stocks, all the silliness. It said in this bill they're proposing, it's not going to make it through the Alabama legislature, but this is very similar. It would make you, if you had a pistol grip beneath the weapon, a thumb hole stock, a folding or telescopic stock, a second hand grip, a muzzle or flash suppressor, or a grenade launcher, or you can get the grenades, I don't know, then it would fall under this law where you would have to have like an additional permit in the state. Now, this is, once again, people can file bills for anything. Doesn't mean they're going to be make it through the legislature. But it was good for Sheriff Birch to say, hey, by the way, look at the Mini 14. What do y'all see? Oh, you know, people go, oh, it's a Woodstock gun. Some of them are poly, but that looks okay. It's the same rifle. Shoot the same round. So, good on you, Sheriff. All right, Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow morning for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.